Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me are two people that are currently working out and fighting invisible monsters. It's John Levengood and Norbert Morvan.
Dude, with the strength of a roach and the training of a jerky, invisible Shaolin monk, I'm ready.
I've been guarding my gate for a long time, bitch. Yeah. Yeah. Best line in the entire
no
movie.
Pain.
Good to meet you.
No gain.
That's hey. Right. Gonna put your hands on me.
Now,
that's like the theme song of the movie.
The beginning, I wrote it down. It's like, running from the nightmare. I can't even sing it, but the song caught me. I was just jamming. I was like, man.
I'm running from a nightmare. I can't. Tuesday night, ladies and gentlemen.
I wish the audience could see what I just saw as his hands
Beautiful.
Were working. Like, think Mark Wahlberg from Rockstar. Like, he's just feeling the music come out. Very, very Guns N' Roses. Like, you need the glam hair, the glam rock hair.
Hey, if you're Mark Wahlberg from Rockstar, can I be Timothy Olyphant from Rockstar?
You most certainly
yeah.
can.
I thought you already were, man, with the 8-12 pack that you always have, baby.
I love it. Now, hey, before we get into this film, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, I just got to tell y'all two things. So, first, this franchise and the Friday the 13th franchises, that was very clumsy, they make me appreciate the Scream franchise more. Because Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4. This one's A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. I mean, Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. Just spelling those out is a nightmare.
Right.
But hey, yeah, Scream 2. I think I would just take that franchise. So that's it. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, it's because we all know, as avid videophiles, that the greatest sequel name ever is Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
So we needed to delineate these movies other than just 2, 3, 4, and 5, you know, because that's what Rambo did and stuff like Rambo 3. Oh, whatever,
yeah.
You know,
so you just needed to make these the Dream Master, not just Nose 4.
Exactly. Put some effort into it.
Wow.
How about Critters 2, The Second Course?
I mean, that's beautiful.
That's
I love
right.
that. Right. That.
Absolutely.
But it's cheeky. Like Happy Death Day to You. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm for it. But just not. A Nightmare on Elm Street 46. Freddy goes to camp, and he also leaves the camp, but then he goes back to the camp. And then he's like, wait, why did I leave the camp? I lost my wallet. And he goes back to the camp. And then he goes back to space, and then to the camp. Like, that's what I don't want.
I think like in Noe's 47, Freddy takes over an office building. It's years into the COVID pandemic, and it's still going on, and he has to use a talented, vivid dreamer to pull people into the office building, because that's where he manifested.
Whoa. That sounds like Hellraiser.
Pretty much. Well, it all depends, you know. I mean, does that dream person that he manifests, are they able to properly handle IT problems, you know? Because Control-Alt-Delete doesn't always work.
Yeah, only in their dreams. That's their dream power.
Exactly. You know, is the cost of your soul worth always telling me, just turn it on and turn it back on?
Did you try restarting it, bitch?
Exactly.
I want to see him work a printer. So Norbert and I had a printer in Korea that we had to always work on. Imagine Freddy with his glove trying to fix that thing.
he would just be manifesting more paper jams than he solved.
This Freddy will be like, PC load lamp, bitch.
This printer's always breaking
down.
What
the hell does that mean?
Maybe it's you, Freddy.
What, bitch?
Oh, man.
Yeah, man.
And then there's
definite shout-out.
Oh, no, go for
oh,
it.
Sorry,
go for it.
Go ahead. I was going to say, definite shout-out to that Rick and Morty character, Scary Terry, who just quickly encapsulates everything that's horrible about Freddy Krueger, just the constant use of the word, bitch. Oh, bitch. It's great.
Now, during a recent episode of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, I came across a realization, and I just want to share it with y'all real quick. So, as we know, Rennie Harlan, the director of Deep Blue Sea, directed this movie. He directed A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Masters. I started looking through his filmography, and also in this movie, there's a shark. Freddy's glove is a shark fin, so reddest, greenest, my glove is like a shark fin. So,
wow.
Right? But then I started looking through his movies. So you have Nose 4, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Waterbed, right? The waterbed scene, submerged in water. Long Kiss Goodnight, she gets submerged when she's being tortured. She shoots the hole and the ice falls right through it, submerged in water. Cliffhanger. Stallone pops out of frozen water. 12 rounds, John Cena jumps from a helicopter into a pool. He's submerged. In Driven, a vehicle blows up, and then the guy's completely submerged in water. He drops into water.
Mm.
In Cutthroat Island, presumably, there are sharks all over the place. We just never see them.
There's a ton of water. There's an underwater kiss between Davis and Modine. Everyone's jumping in the water. In The Covenant, they're swimmers. In Skip Trace, people drown, and they're rafting, and they fall into the water. In The Legend of Hercules, he's a cliff diver. So, Adventures of Ford Fairlane, Andrew Dice Clay fights Robert Englund in a sinking boat. Robert Englund sinks under the water, pops up behind him, is like, ha-ha! So he's like a shark. And then you have, the only movies where there isn't complete submergence is Exorcist the beginning, but he went on for reshoots, so I don't count that. But the other two are Die Hard 2 and Devil's Past. But there's moments where they're completely engulfed in snow, which, if
it's frozen water.
So almost all of Renly Harlan's movies, including Nightmare on Elm Street 4, and I haven't seen his first film, so I can't talk on that. But all of those, people are submerged in water.
So at some point in Renny Harlin's development years, he had some horrific experience with a shark making out with a girl and or fire. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah. So I just think it's funny that in almost every Renny Harlin movie, people are submerged in water. There's no point to it. It's a random thing that came across and I had to research it. It's glorious.
The Moisture of Harlin, part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
That sounds like an adult film with a very unsavory
Renny
title.
Moist Harlan presents Waterworld. More wet.
Renny Harlan's.
More water, more world. More water, less world.
Waterworld 2? Is that the pitch?
More
for
water, less
the
world.
Elevator pitch?
Oh, I like that.
Okay, so there's a world, right? But it's like underwater. Yeah. Waterworld 2.
And now there's even more water, but you can't tell because there's no land to cover
up. Exactly.
Holy snipe.
Remember the first one? It's 10 feet higher now.
Whoa.
So now, one more thing I want to put you two through. And I want you guys to rank the one-liners in this movie. I pulled the best ones.
Ooh.
So, we all know this is when... Okay, so Freddy had 1 and 2 and 3, and he had lines before. But this is like the MTV Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, Robert Englund in the Making Of documentary said he was exhausted, didn't want to do it. But he's like, this is like MTV and Rennie has a ton of energy and they hired him because he's a tall Finnish man and they figured he could work long hours and not get paid much. And they said he smelled. Which is the truth. He went to office all the time. They eventually hired him because he looked big and he could handle the hours. Dead serious. It's in the Never Sleep Again documentary.
That's a great
This one,
yeah.
I just saw that today, by the way. He looks like he would be the front man of one of the music videos for one of the songs in this great soundtrack, by the way. Three and four really bring it on the soundtracks.
They do. And you notice it in part 5 when they close the movie with a cool Modee song that was basically the answer to Mama Said Knock You Out. They just didn't care at all in part 5. It was just a cash grab.
Yeah, I mean, we're covering that one on the – we're doing that full series. We're doing 3, 4, and 5 here. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's a tight trilogy.
I mean, it's fun, right? And I guess we'll talk about franchises later, but I like it. I like this arc. It's a fun arc in this. I did miss Patricia Arquette, though, in this movie. But, I mean, Tuesday's fine. What do y'all think?
The problem I have with Tuesday Night is that she just looks like a grown-ass woman. There's no way that she's in high school, you know? If she is a high school student, it's because she's Jerry Blank from Strangers with Candy, you know? Just a 46-year-old ex-prostitute. She's a boozer, a user, and a loser trying to start her life all over again from where she left it.
And dating a junior.
And dating a junior, yeah. She's just dark, man.
I was waiting for her to become a reporter, and then David Arquette shows up as her brother.
It would have made perfect sense. I just can't, you know, and you can tell that Tuesday Night, you know, she's not so much an actress as she is a singer who wants to kind of just spread her wings, you know, and just also, oh, by the way, I also been in a couple of movies. If you look at her IMDb, she's got this incredible discography of just hardcore / soft 80s rock. So she was a musician more than an actress. And you can tell. Mm-hmm. As she walks through this movie, I just can't. I want Freddy. He's coming back, guys. I'm telling you.
I missed the wounded kind of I miss Patricia Arquette. She had a very good wounded, tired vibe in the third one. I dug her a lot.
Oh, cornered, injured wolf.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved, you know, I mean, whatever. But, I mean, I know this movie becomes about Alice, and it's Alice's trip down the rabbit hole. Oh, brother.
It was another passing of the baton, you know. Part three passed the baton from Nancy to Kristen. And then they just decided, okay, you know, let's just murder Kristen now. And let's bring doe-eyed, oh, my God, I can't even remember her name. She's so
Alice. Yeah.
Yeah. Alice is just so, I really like to talk to people, but I'm so shy. Keep in mind, though, she's got a great arc in this movie because she does come full circle from mousy girl to I will kick your ass, Freddy. I'll do kung fu from my brother's soul.
And it all started when Tuesday night Highlander Hadoukens her power into her.
Yes.
It goes through Freddy, yes. Right? And into her?
Oh, right. Mm. I don't even understand what happened there because it seemed to pause at Freddy. Like it stopped and hurt Freddy and then it kept going. But it didn't just shoot through him. It really like hit him and then shot from him to her. I never noticed how baffling that was until my most recent rewatch.
Pinballed around his insides for a little bit.
There are so many film concepts of very recent films to this that I see like the DNA of just kind of twisted in. I feel a bit of Mark, you might have almost mentioned something in our first few minutes. I feel a tiny bit of Hellraiser influence in this Freddy movie, and I don't think it's a coincidence. And of course, Rennie's pretty brand new. I mean, he did Prison right before this, but still, he's relatively brand new to helming significant films. Like, you know, and then of course you have your Alice in Wonderland really kind of also echoing some Dorothy of Oz stuff where some magical person behind a curtain is creating, you know, this world and controlling it. And she'll eventually get power from her friends,
right?
Like, you know, to help defeat him. And this is, by the way, no negative criticism at all. It's because it's wisped all over this thing. This is like a bouillabaisse movie, like no other Noe's movie.
I want that on the Blu-ray.
Oh,
we need John's horror corner.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
That needs to happen.
And you're 100%.
Oh, when Shout right. Factory does it, that needs to be on the front box of it because.
Well, you know what? If Robert Englund wants to give me a call and ask me to do one of the commentaries, I'm all in. And if
that's right.
And if an intern calls me, I'm also all in, and I'll fly myself out there. That's fine too.
So
make it so. Number one.
What did y'all? When did y'all first watch? Well, we'll deal with the thing later. But when did y'all first watch this movie? Because when this came out, this was a success. I mean, this cleared 100 million like easily at the box office at the time, you know, with inflation, and it was well reviewed. Mm-hmm. Audiences, I saw a behind the scenes thing of people leaving the theater, and they were jazzed. They loved this movie. Like the kids. And I like in Never Sleep Again, Renny Harlin's like, yes, we need more of this. The teenagers will love it. When was the first time you watched this? And what was your first thoughts in regards to the rest of the franchise for either of y'all?
Well, in 88, I was 10. So I'm pretty sure that I caught this on WPIX Channel 11. So it was all heavily edited. But, you know, Freddy was a massive deal, man, at the time in the 80s. Because by the time Part 2 came out, Will Smith came out with He's the DJ and I'm the Rapper. With, you know, DJ, him and Jazzy Jeff. So they made the song Nightmare on mm-hmm. My Street. And Nightmare on My Street was, I would say, Will Smith's first foray into summarizing a movie into a rap. And it was a movie that he wasn't even in, you know, because he tells you exactly what happens. You've got the body and I've got the brain. Boom, doom, doom, ka-doom, boom, ba-doom, bing, boom. It was just really well produced. So by the time I see this, I'm like, okay. Yeah, 3 was awesome. I had not seen 2 as a child. These movies were just totally marketed towards 10 and 13-year-olds like me, which is insane because there is nudity, murder, cursing, and the implication that he's doing filthy things to these little girls as he's murdering them. But not like in the remake where they just straight up say, yeah, so Freddy's a child molester. They just say it straight up.
I love that he's trying to kill the kids because they snitched on him, but they were right, not because they were wrong.
Yeah. The best thing to me about that remake is that you go on for maybe the first 35 minutes thinking, wait a minute, what if he didn't actually do this? So that was crazy. Because now it goes from this psycho child molester turns into a hell nightmare demon, continuing his psycho child molesting and murder, to actually he just kind of hung out with kids and like played with them in the garden, and you guys like murdered him, so he's like revenge and all, whatever, you know.
But he was evil.
Yeah, but he actually was. Yeah, he was kind of a POS.
What was it like for you, John? I know you're always into this, but like, what was your vibe on? So we talked about 3. We raved about 3. We really did.
Oh, yeah.
But what were your thoughts about 4 in particular?
So 4 was one of the first 3 unedited horror movies that I ever saw start to finish with an adult in the room and no sneaking around. You know what I mean? Those movies were in order: Evil Dead 2, Poltergeist, and this. And this I saw right after it came out on Columbia House, back when it took a whole year just to make it onto VHS, and even longer often to make it to Columbia House, or at least for like the cheap buys. So I probably saw this more like 1990, as soon as my horror-loving Uncle Rick could get it. And after my cousin had went to sleep one night, who's 2 years younger than me, and I guess I'm like 9 or 10 at the time. My cousin would have been 7.5 or 8 at the time. My uncle turns to me, I'm sleeping over, do you want to watch one more movie? And he couldn't wait to pull this out. He loved it. You know, this is, I don't know how to put it, you know, even for an adult, getting to see some boobs every now and then is nice. You don't have HBO. It's
right.
And he was bringing his nephew into the fold. And I was just like, I looked at him with this smile. It was almost like dad offering you your first sip of beer kind of thing. Oh, yeah, I want to watch this. So this was my first Freddy movie, unedited. I might have seen bits before.
Wow.
And of course, I love doing it. And what a great movie to kind of be introduced to horror with, right? You know, like Evil Dead 2 was just batshit insane. Poltergeist is great horror that comes from the heart and isn't really very mean, at least not the sum of it. And then something like this, which is this strange middle ground that was just so iconic of its time. And this is a movie I've always loved, and I used to think this was that 3 and 4 were where Freddy started to get more comical. And he did, but
it was, yeah.
Honestly, as I watch them more and more and more and more, like every single subsequent viewing of these movies, I probably see them every, 2-3 years. I find more seriousness to be taken of them. I almost view it, I've said this so many times, like the Saw movies. People don't take the Saw movies seriously because they won't watch parts 4 and 5 right before they watch part 6. And they don't realize how rich the plot is and how linked it is. They think they're just hand waving something and explaining it poorly, when really this is one big rich story. I think that the evolution of Freddy, the fact that you're actually having a continuous story from 3 to 5 going on, I think that's often missed. People see the movie, they see the next movie, and they're just, oh yeah, that had something to do with the previous one. Who cares? He's killing teenagers and it's funny. But it's all a lot richer to me, and the religion they tried to bring into it at the end, and just the kind of, even though he gets a little funny, right, or yet funnier, and he's putting on sunglasses, and his claw is a shark's fin, sure, but he's making soul pizza, and that's a middle ground of mean and funny, and he has souls tearing out of his body to try and reap vengeance on him, and that's pretty rooted in a lot more than a funny killer. So it's like this, it kept going down that trajectory of Freddy's getting a little sillier, but Freddy's also becoming richer. And normally when we think of the silliness, like a Leprechaun movie or a Jason movie, we think that it's cheapening the character. And I've come more and more in the last 5-10 years, especially of my life, to realize nothing of the sort is going on. And so that's very interesting to me. So my view of the movie has evolved very much, just like I'm seeing more and more the character evolving. Boy, that was
I love it. That was great.
I didn't expect.
No. You made some really good points, man, because 4 picks up the baton from 3, where we bring now the spirituality. There's the Amanda Krueger, all right? We get the whole now we find out, oh yeah, this guy actually is the bastard son of 100 maniacs, because 1 and 2 were really dark, but they weren't trying to be, like you say, spiritual. There weren't so many rules other than that. If you fall asleep and you die in your dream, you die in real life. But now we are expanding things. It's, hey, we start off right from basically the end of part 3, where you get the idea. You think of him. If you keep thinking of him, he's going to come back. And then they take a lot of the rules that are established in 3 and 4 and put them in the five, Freddy versus Jason.
Mm-hmm.
That if you think of him, this is what makes him come back. All right. You can bring
pantheonic, like, right, you know, exactly. It was, I think there was like tell that even in Greek or Roman mythos that there were these like dead or forgotten gods, and there might have been thousands of them. And when a god had no worshipers, it would cease to exist.
Exactly. So they take that idea of, oh, I got to make these kids think of me. And they bring that into Freddy versus Jason. They even take some things from the 3D one, The Final Nightmare, and put that into Freddy versus Jason. So these concepts of just, it goes from, oh, creepy dream demon, to now Freddy's got a couple of jokes. Oh, Rick, you little meatball. But that's sadistic, yeah, as opposed to just being comedic. You know, you get the idea that he's not just, oh, I'm stabbing kids. He has to freak them out a lot first.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the steam in, why can't I think, Mark? I'm brain farting on the movie title. The steam and the kids, they have to be terrified.
Oh, Dr. Sleep.
Like the steam and Dr. Sleep are almost like, the devil doesn't just want your soul. He wants to revel in the hunt and bask in the glory of it. And maybe this is... we're seeing that devil do it. It's not good enough just to win.
Right. And so he's murdering these kids. And as opposed to, hey, you're asleep, I've got this claw glove, I'm going to stab you. It's, I'm going to put you in a roach motel because you're scared of bugs.
Right.
I'm going to kill you with asthma.
Yeah.
Because you have asthma. You know, you like eating disorder. Yeah. You like naked women, I'm going to entice you and then suck you into the bed, you know, which is homage to part 1, the exploding blood. So much is happening in 4. And 4, you know, it's brightly shot. It's one of the least dark looking ones, because when you get to part 5, you get a lot of blue overtones and the weird Escher maze that they have to chase Jacob through. This one is bright. This one, it cuts right to the point. It gets rid of all of the old characters from the first 3 movies in like the first 20, 30 minutes. And now we're focusing on the love between Alex and Dan. You're such a hunk.
I like that guy for some reason, because there's nothing to him, but maybe I like that. There's no drama to the kid. He's never a jock, actually, right? He's never the nerd. Like, remember when that guy's making fun of
him? He plays into none of that.
Remember when that kid's being mean to that other kid, and he just slams that dude in the locker, and the next second they're just chatting?
Yeah.
And then he stops by to say hi to her and buy some gum? Like,
He's a good guy. And then when it comes down to it, well, Alice, what's wrong? Okay, Dan, so there's like this dream demon, and he killed all my friends, and now I like take their powers, and I have to go into the dream world and fight him. He's like, okay, cool. You know, I got your back.
And when he's with Bodybuilder, he notices that she, with each death, she's getting more and more different, and she's absorbing other people. It's a weird not weird. It's a unique handling of that kind of character in this kind of movie, would you say? Because...
Because this is the 80s.
There's the jock. When he just like helped his buddy out, slammed that dude against the wall. You're like, oh, hey, this is weird. And this movie kept setting me back, because you have the lady who lifts weights, right? And you expect her to maybe be the rude person. But then there's a scene where Sheila makes her a sound thing to scare away cockroaches. So they're all friends.
They're good friends.
Like, but they just give each other crap. It's a weird, it's a nice dynamic.
It's weird. You know what it is? It's normal. It's just weird to see something so harrowingly normal in a movie, because it's not playing on the tropes.
There it is. Yeah, weird's the word. It's the wrong word. I just can't think of something else. But yeah, these characters, they're nice to each other.
It's jarringly normal.
Like,
They are. They act like humans. And it had been, and you keep talking about the jock thing because it had been established, especially by, you know, the Revenge of the Nerds franchise. If you're good at sports, you don't care about reading books, you don't want to be smart, you don't want to show any intelligence or human emotion whatsoever, or kindness, or any kind of empathy. You are a jerk. You can throw the football. You have sex with every woman who's blonde.
And your friends are only other jocks.
That's it. Here, Dan is hanging out with this weird guy who's into Eastern philosophy that practices karate to, I'll get you in it.
He was like Matthew Broderick meets Christian Slater of the 80s.
Yeah.
That guy's perfect, man. And I really – he's the only Nightmare on Elm Street character I really feel bad when he dies because that guy was cool as hell.
He seemed to be a good – I liked his introduction with his dad where he doesn't want to deal with his drunk dad who's drinking a Bloody Mary in the morning.
He makes a Bloody Mary right in front of him.
Going out dressed like that. And I'm like, wait, what? But then he just makes a joke to his dad. And then he's pretty good to his girlfriend too. He likes her. It's –
Well, he's into older women, you know, as you can see, you know, because you can see she's got matching luggage. I mean, the bags under your
arms. Oh, yeah. I remember that line. It's not a terrible line. But yeah. So you got that kid who's not the terrible brother. Then you have the Alice who, like, you know, she puts all those photos up in the mirror. Then she takes them down, eventually looks at herself. Then she's like F and A when she becomes a badass.
Right.
She's designed a virginal final girl horror tropes, but then they kind of cabin in the woods her before there was cabin in the woods.
Yeah. And that, I keep using the word weird, but these characters, I can't think of the last time I've seen.
Well, the thing that you're hung up on is the fact that for a Freddy movie and for a horror movie in general, these are fully realized characters. Yeah. They all, even though they get murdered rather quickly, they all go through some kind of an arc as they're trying to deal with this, you know? So he's down to earth to deal with his, frankly, emotionally abusive drunk of a father. Does he beat his girlfriend? No. He hangs out with the stereotypical, well, not the non-stereotypical 80 jock, you know? But is he a jerk to other people? No. The only time he makes that joke is when the two guys from part three come up to him, you know, and maybe your boyfriend is not taking care of business at night. And then he just comes with the perfect comeback, you know. Oh, we don't kiss and tell. What about you guys? Aha! Burn, you know. He is not going to attack. He's going to play defense because he's got a soul. He's an honorable dude. He's trying to stay calm. Mm-hmm. Because he knows the world is insane around him. And his drunk father, instead of playing, you should be better. It's not my fault mom died. No, he's not that guy. He's sad.
Whoa.
I'm karate. Even,
he's so good at karate that during a scene where they ran out of money and it was the writer's strike, so they couldn't work on the script anymore, which is beautiful. I mean, Rennie came up with most of these kills during the docks, which I love. But he lands shots on an invisible Nightmare Demon. I mean,
I'm watching that scene right now.
Yeah, when he was studying Haymaker Fu.
And you know what's funny? He said that he practiced karate for several weeks. You guys know this, but I don't know if you're listening to it, if you haven't. But he was like, yeah, I learned all these official moves. I'm like, no, just throw haymakers. And so he's like, that's not karate. Yeah, they're going to laugh me out of the theater. So even the actor learned proper stuff, but they're like, nah, just wing them. But I mean, listen, on my tombstone, right, if I ever battle an invisible Nightmare Demon, and I land some strikes, and I give it like a black eye and a broken jaw. Put that on my tombstone. Mark died, but he broke an invisible ghost demon's jaw. Like put that on there.
And then as the funeral's closing, we press play on the cassette in the boombox. I'll give you anything you want, anything.
And I pop out and go, yeah baby.
And then you do a high kick.
Sigh.
I wasn't dead.
Yeah.
But that's really – I'm glad you all found those words for me because I couldn't – I'm like, this is odd. This is – I wasn't expecting this. And I just want to do something real quick. And I'm veering away from the movie, but I just want to ask you all a question. So the Nightmare on Elm Street movies – so I recently did a bunch of data for a video coming up, and I realized that, you know, the first Halloween with inflation made $188 million. The Scream movies, two of them made over $200 million. But none of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, even with adjusted for inflation totals, never came close to those. They never came close to matching that, even adjusted for inflation. So I would argue that Freddy was in the pop culture. Freddy was in the lexicon. He is not going anywhere. But why did those movies not make as much money as, say, a Halloween or a Scream or Scream 2?
I mean, they made a lot of money, especially for a horror movie. They just didn't compare to the phenoms that you're bringing up. And that's just it. It's that your Scream and your Halloween, they were lightning in a bottle phenoms. And while I'd like to say that Nightmare on Elm Street on paper is that as well, it, whether marketing or realization or on screen or the way that the world reacted to it in the moment instead of later, maybe it just kept it from happening. Maybe the world literally wasn't ready in 1984 for Freddy. Maybe the world wasn't ready in 1987 for Welcome to Primetime Bitch, even though they loved the movie and it did well, right? Maybe they still weren't quite enough of us weren't ready. Maybe it's something, you know, something demographic, something sociological in the undertow that we're missing that keeps it from getting there. I don't know. And maybe also, though, it's just that when Freddy came out, he was a great, brilliant, different kind of slasher, but we had already been introduced to several others. Yeah. And when Scream came out, sure, we had plenty of slashers, but what we did not have was many smartly, very thoughtfully written scripts, really smart, and a meta movie on top of that. So, you know, I think that's what separates our Halloween and our Scream from our Nightmare on Elm Street, as wonderful an idea as I think it is, as deep an idea as I think it is. At that point, it's just another movie with a great idea. I don't mean to say just another movie, but it's when we're talking about this explosion in the box office and the world is just agog by it. And I think it pushes some people away that child molesting, yeah, that these parents killed this thing. I think we're questioning our grips on normalcy and even our fantasies to veer from normalcy with some of these concepts that are brought up in this movie. A dude watches his girlfriend get cut up all over the wall in a brilliant spinning cube of a room set.
And on a budget, he's going too, which to jail blows my it. Mind.
Right. Yeah. And then he goes to jail for it. And then it looks like he killed himself when Freddy killed him. Like, that's mean. I don't think the world was good at me. The cult groups were good at loving that, but I don't think the public was. And I think that's where the box office drain was beating the box office game.
Probably nothing in Halloween was as mean. We're rhyming a lot. Was as mean as that scene. And then Scream, I mean,
the dream.
Oh, it's a draining game. Yeah,
and then Scream, I mean,
that.
The beginning's mean, but the rest of it is more kind of meta and almost Paul Verhoeven-esque, where you can be a fan of horror and like it. You can be a fan of meta and like it. There's something for everybody. But with Freddy, like you said, the death along the room, right? The geyser of blood, the maybe occult type viewpoints. Maybe that was easier to rally against for people.
A lot of Christianity, A lot of Christianity pops up.
What do you think about why? I know I think it's an interesting question, right? Like you said, John, those two hit the zeitgeist and they exploded. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street hit the zeitgeist for sure. But they didn't explode. So, what do you think?
Well, and the thing about it is, Freddy is pretty much unavoidable. So, you know, with Jason, if you leave Camp Crystal Lake, you're good. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Myers, I mean, I guess he would walk across the country to find you.
Or
but,
drive.
You know, whatever. Or drive. Yeah, he's a mute. And he doesn't seem like the sharpest machete in the tool shed. See how I did that there? but Freddy's in your dreams, man. Yeah. There's not a person on this planet that hasn't had a horrific nightmare. So you get this dream demon who is invincible. And even though the rules kind of change a little bit in every film, so, okay, if we bury him this time and put some holy water on him, that will get rid of him. Nope. Now it's to the point where if you think about this guy, he's going to come back in your dreams and murder you eventually once he gets strong enough. There's nothing you can do about that. The reason why Alien used to freak me out is because we get to the point where, okay, if you had a gun, right, you think you could kill him, But now you come to find out when Vasquez is in that little in the air duct shooting the alien with the handgun, the bullets are just bouncing off. So you can't even shoot these things with just normal weapons. So Freddy might have been a little bit too much for people to handle. Me, I was so jaded in the 80s because I just grew up watching a bunch of horror movies. Freddy always made me laugh. Freddy never scared me. But for a lot of other people, something that comes in your dreams and kills you in your dream, that's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it plays well on childhood fears a little more than most of our slashers do, too. We have the screeching sound of the blades, which just recoils many people. The boiler room, well, kids don't get that, but what kids get are creepy basements. Growing up in the 80s or 70s, you have a basement, maybe the light, you have to take two steps in to get to it. It's a little unnerving. Most of the unless you had money in the family or something, or you got lucky, your basement wasn't finished. There was always something a little off about it. It would pick up some water when it rained. There would always be cave crickets or some shit down there, or like those centipedes, those northeastern centipedes that look like skeleton ghost centipedes. They're terrifying. But you know, it's like the basement was a scary place, and the basement was also something that was used in a lot of horror movies. And even though here it's never the basement, it is every bit as fantastically horrifying.
Yeah,
it's a man in the shadows. It's in part one, like you're a kid and you first develop your sense of a social life, and you're getting home just after dark, and you see someone at the end of the alley. I grew up in the Northeast. There were a lot of alleys. I know, like, down here in Florida, there aren't as many alleys unless you're in one of the cities. But, like, you see a dark figure in the alley, and at first you always would stop, and your notion was, are they coming towards me or moving away from me? Because you wanted to know right away. And so Freddy in the alley, and then he just starts running at you. Like, that's all of our horrors. If you grew up in a metropolis, I was in the Northeast, whenever someone's walking behind you in a city, you can be a grown-ass adult and a big dude. You get a little nervous. You pick up your pace. You deliberately slow down a lot so that they have to catch you. You do something. And the first movie especially set the tone so well for that. And he has a hat. Just to make seeing the glimmer of a face that you could or couldn't recognize that much harder under a streetlight. It was such beautiful mood setting. Again, the zeitgeist is there. Just other concepts in this web, I think, alienated too many whole thought processes, too many groups of people.
What got me
beautiful movies, really. They're kind of mean, but they're beautiful movies.
What got me about Freddy was Robert Englund. He's a live man. He's a petite man, right? I'm not saying that's not an insult, but when you think about Jason, right? When you think about Pumpkinhead, when you think about Mike Myers, these are not slight, petite, thin men. Like, so when you see Freddy, he's just skinny, and you think you probably could head and arm him, but you know, like, he has that magic and that cruelty. So you have this creature that's wiry and he's murdering you. It's almost a different reaction, I guess, than just a large lumbering immortal. I mean, he is immortal, but when Robert Englund, who's slight, does that, I wonder if that sort of messes with your psyche a little bit.
Well, that's the thing, man. They spend part 3, 4, and 5 literally doing dream hand-to-hand combat with Freddy Krueger, punching him in the face, spinning bird kicks from Street Fighter. Why? The dude's in your dream. You know, you think that's air you're breathing? That's literally the truth. It's a dream.
You're Morpheus.
She lands 25 punches on him in the final fight. And nothing.
Why am I punching a dream in the face? I mean, how do I think this is going to do anything? You know, it's almost as futile as Jason Takes Manhattan, dude, the brother who's just like, yeah, I'm going to throw hands with Voorhees. You're punching a zombie in the hockey mask, dude. What are you talking about? So, yeah, the concept that this little burnt dude is going to just do me damage, it's ridiculous until he does. Because he realizes, oh, by the way, you're afraid of snakes. And, oh, look, that's a snake coming out of your CD Walkman. And it's going to murder you. This is that era. You know what I'm saying? Your tape deck, you thought you liked music. But now the headphone has turned into a giant snake hose. And, oh, look, it's inside your pancreas. And, I'm eating your soul, Rick, you little meatball.
You listen to a White Snake cassette, and you go to flip it around, and you pop open your cassette player.
It's an actual White Snake. Actual Whitesnake.
Takes your eyeball out.
Yeah, who's that? Freddy goes big. He goes straight for the ridiculous pun. He doesn't care. And then the pun murders you, you know? Part six, suddenly he puts the kid in the video game. The glove is now...
Glove.
Power glove. Now you're playing with power, you know? High score. It's so ridiculous, man. No, I'm not going to let this little mushroom murder me. And then he does. Yeah.
I love it. Hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will talk more Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I know John has a quick point for us, but before we do, we're going to do something really interesting. We're going to do a draft between you and Norbert, John.
Uh-oh.
And you can go to Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook to vote on this. What we're going to do is you can draft from five franchises. Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween, Scream, and Leprechaun. Five movies. You can only pick one from each franchise.
One. We each pick one movie per franchise.
But you got to be smart with this, because who knows what movies people are going to pick. So this one gets a little gnarly. But you can only pick one from each franchise, and I'm taking, get this, I'm taking the first movie out of each one.
No part ones.
Okay.
Because that, you know, like, let's prevent ringers. Let's have some fun.
Sure.
So no part ones. Those five franchises, and you have to pick one from each. So, let's see. I have one or two, Norbert. One or two.
One or two.
We'll just say pick. I either have one or two fingers up. So, pick.
Ah, okay. Two.
You get first pick.
Aha, getting jiggy with it. Nah. All right, cool. Okay.
If
so,
you don't fear us, don't come near us. Oh, Men in Black. My bad.
That's right. I'm sorry.
That was on my 90s Sirius channel the other day, and I was jamming out to Men in Black in my truck.
The good guy. Just
remember
to
that.
See what you've done to me. Damn it. Okay. I am going to choose Friday the 13th, Part 10, Jason X, because I love that.
All right,
that.
Jason X.
I'd love that movie.
This sucks.
That would have been mine.
I love it. Yeah, it sucks. Anyway.
He's screwed.
What is that? What is that, Jason effing Voorhees? Yeah.
He's screwed.
It's awesome.
I'm taking Dream Warriors.
Ooh, all right.
Mint. Okay, so one from each franchise, right? Okay. I am going to go...
This is fun. I'm looking for... I like hearing these picks.
I am going to go Scream 2, Electric Boogaloo.
That would have been my first pick.
I'm doing H2O.
Oh, I love H2O. And we're doing an episode about that coming up. I can't wait. 80 minutes of pure gold. All right. H2O.
Nice.
All right.
Nice. Okay. Continuing my theme here, I'm going Leprechaun 4 in space.
Okay.
Oh, man, that death.
Leprechaun, I believe Leprechaun 3 was the one that went to Vegas. Okay. I'm taking Leprechaun 3 because the potential of worldwide catastrophe was in that movie and only that movie, because when he bit a dude, the dude started to turn into a were-leprechaun, and they did not explore, like, and he was getting a little twitchy. Like, what if some people on the street were like, oh my God, you need help, and he bites somebody's arm? You could have had Where Leprechaun again in Las Vegas with people flying home to other continents and metropolises. That could have been the Leprechaun's biggest possible win of all Leprechaun movies. So I'm saying Leprechaun 2. 3.
Oh, exactly. Leprechaun pandemic.
Always
in the building. Okay.
Leprechaun Ademic. St. Patrick Ademic.
Hey. Oh, hey.
Ademic.
I love it.
This sound of my applause.
It.
Well played. Well played.
Right, so okay. You're up, Norbert.
All right, so I got a Jason, I got a Leprechaun, I got a Scream, and then you said Halloween,
yeah,
right?
Or nose.
Leprechaun 2 was good, though, because that was one where he was looking for a bride. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, and they put him in a safe.
Well, Leprechaun 4, I mean, he's trying to bag alien princesses, you know? So
that was cool, too. And then he had that spider monster guy that was made. He emerged from someone's penis.
Yeah, always
was that one?
And he smushes a guy's head.
Do you think that what was it, Prometheus stole
100%.
From Leprechaun 4?
Totally.
With the wispy fungal spore getting to the guy when he was taking a leak in the beginning?
Why would you put that past Ridley Scott to just be like, I'm going to watch the Leprechaun series and steal some ideas. All right, let's see. Halloween. You already took H2O.
That's my favorite one of them all.
It's literally the one that's awesome. There's one that's coming out soon. Yeah. I'm going to take Season of the Witch. Which one is that?
Halloween 3.
3. That used to come on Channel 11 all the time. Be like, tonight at 7, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And you would just see children walking down the street, you know? I feel like Michael Myers was barely even in that movie. It's just weird.
You know what? That silhouette of the three kids in the three costumes, I feel like that is what influenced the three trick-or-treaters in The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, why not?
Such a movie. This is Christmas, fa-la-la.
Oh, man, that movie.
This is Christmas, you gotta love that. You gotta love that movie, man. 100%. I don't.
She keeps poisoning that guy.
Is it my turn or your turn? I'm sorry. I got caught up in the reverie.
Now it's your turn. I chose Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Okay, that's right. I'm gonna take Jason Goes to Hell because that is my flavor of bonkers.
It's an amazing.
I mean, so is Jason X. Honestly, for me, it was between those two, and you just decided for me when you picked one.
Listen to me, Jason Goes to Hell is amazing because. You get the guy who played Tommy Gunn's manager in Rocket 5. And he is just, you know, the medical examiner who is hypnotized by the heart, the dead beating, separating heart of Jason Voorhees. Yeah, I'm going to be a psycho. And then we just go into The Hidden. Like, we're just going to rip this movie off.
Hidden and Evil Dead with the Necronomicon. So it's like the alien from The Hidden was killed, went to hell, came back as a deadite worm, and then created deadite zombie vengeance demons.
There's two moments.
And then the Necronomicon shows up in the Venture Brothers when, during the trial of the monarch, you know, Dr. Orpheus, I'm not going to swear on your Bible. I have a different book. But be careful. Don't put your fingers near its mouth. It's bitey.
The two moments I love about Jason Goes to Hell are the beginning, that lady, she's an FBI agent, and they just blow him the where they get the generators for those lights, by the way. I just want to know that setup. But then what if Jason walked through and they said, I love when they blow him up. And then I love when that dude speared with the Letterman jacket, but he looks about 40. Spears Jason through the window, because the trope is him throwing people through windows or him exploding. I love that Jason, and then he had the playground fight and destroyed the guy, but for one beautiful moment, that dude speared Jason through a window. It was beautiful. Oh, I love that scene.
I never understood if dude in the Leatherman jacket was supposed to be just graduated from college or guy trying to reclaim his misspent youth, because how old is he? Who are these people? And that's why it's great when they all die.
He does that cool handcuff thing, too. Remember when he has a handcuff and he jumps over him? He's a surprisingly athletic dude. That movie.
The Letterman jacket has to mean something. Okay. So, I picked Scream. I picked Leprechaun. I picked Halloween. I picked Fred. Okay. So, the last one, Nightmare on Elm Street, right? Okay. It's got to be Freddy versus Jason, man. Sorry.
That's strong.
Freddy vs. Jason is not only a love letter to fans of both series, but just a love letter to fans of horror up till that point in general. Every little trope that you could have, you know, getting drunk at the party, check, you know, sexy co-eds, check, you know, the one virginal girl is there, check. And then Freddy, not only is it Freddy vs. Jason, finally, the hand-to-hand combat that makes sense, but Freddy is doing martial arts.
Right. Jumping roundhouse kick.
He comes out of nowhere with the bow from what is that? Muay Thai? It's such a great fight. That fight is so awesome.
There's a couple characters I like in that one, too. The kid Mark, I think his name is. I thought he was a pretty good actor in that. He kind of drew me in. I would just be staring at this. I don't even know who to vote for right now. All right, John, who's your last pick?
Well, I guess it's going to be Scream 4. There aren't a lot to pick from Scream, but, you know, it didn't hit super awesomely for me when it dropped. But I liked what they were trying to do, and there weren't really a lot of movies at the time that were trying to do the instead of starting over, we're going to do it, or instead of starting a new timeline, instead of rebooting, instead of simply forgetting everything that happened with the past characters, we're just going to give you a part 4 with new characters. Instead of all that shit, they're like, hey, here's this new cast. But the old cast still exists in this world. You know, it's almost like your Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, where Nancy comes back as the therapist, but it's just one character. This is a merging of really two conceptual franchises. I like that they tried to do that. We're going to see more of that in the not too distant future with Scream 5. So again, while the movie didn't quite hit with me, but maybe part of that is because that younger cast isn't my generation's cast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just want to pretend that they're vampires and they'll stay the same age and I can keep seeing Scream sequels forever, but I can't. So I like what they tried to do. I'm going to give that to them. So I'm doing Scream
4. There's three moments I really like in that. I like when Gale Weathers tells that deputy Dewey's partner cop. She's like, your lemon squares taste like ass. I love that line. And then I like Kirby in it. I think Kirby, Hayden Panettiere, is really cool in that movie. And then I also like Jill. She's making this whole speech about wanting to be famous and be on social media in 2010. I'm like, look where we're at in 2020. So, I mean, even though we had all the Twitter, Instagram, all that in 2010, it's still maybe more relevant now. So it's hidden. It hasn't really aged the theme. So I dig that about it. Three, though, has Parker Posey, and she just makes everything better. So I love Parker Posey in Scream 3. And her and Warburton.
I don't know.
Weird.
When I see Parker Posey, I don't know if she wants to tell me about the good news that Jesus Christ is coming back to save us all from an eternal damnation, or if she wants to knife me in the back. Her eyes are so creepy,
man. That
makes
a lot of sense.
You know what? Yeah. In Scream 3, too, I know she's always kind of had, you know, her Parker Posey looks, but she kind of had that, like, angry, jealous lip quiver that I just loved to hate in Blade Trinity.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you first see her walking in slow-mo when Ryan Reynolds is like, she's my ex, you see her walking in slow-mo, your introduction to her in Blade Trinity, and she has that, like, it's almost like a resting bitch face meets Rocky's sneer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And when she says, and you'll feed, this thing her mouth doesn't feed.
Quiver. She has a quiver, though. She has a quiver.
Yeah. Yes. Posey. She's the best.
Real quick, I got a question for you guys about part four here.
About Scream 4 or Noe's 4?
Yes, Noe's 4.
Get us back on track.
Thank you. Okay. Debbie, right? She's eating those whatever chips in that bag. Where does that roach come from?
I mean, that was in the bag of her potato wedge things.
Okay, so it's not just me, right? Because I'm thinking
it was in the bag the whole time she was sitting there talking and eating other chips.
Five. Okay.
Yes. It had to be.
Okay. Has this ever happened to you? Have you ever opened a bag of chips and just found a living creature inside?
Do you think she opened it in her car? Or did we see her open it?
Well, no, hold on. Don't forget, this was like a takeout bag, though. These were like potato wedgie things.
Oh, okay.
They were hot.
Yeah.
They were hot things. So I think she went to like a fast food place on her way to school.
Right.
Got it.
Right?
Right.
And so like it probably came from the fast food place because we know they're all glowing icons of...
Well, I'm just... cleanliness. Yeah, totally. So she's got these chips in the bag or whatever the hell they are in the 40 paper bag and just munch, and then look. And it's not a baby cockroach in the bottom of the ship eating all of the grain storage for the last 30 years cockroach. It's just father of cockroaches. So how the hell did she not notice that thing? And it's alive. It wasn't even dead. This has been on my mind for decades. That freaks the hell out of me, that part. Yeah. And then Rick is telling her to calm down. And I'm thinking, no, she has the appropriate disgust level here. There's a living bag, a living road for her food.
Do you think that up until that time, there was ever such a squishy cockroach squitch? And second part of that question, do you think Starship Troopers was influenced by Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4?
Men in Black did it first. Remember who you squishing the cockroaches? And then I think it went, and then Starship Troopers too. So it influenced all those.
John, here's the thing. You said you're from the Northeast, right? I was born in Brooklyn. I grew up in Queens. And, you know.
I was born in Manhattan. I was baptized at St. Bart's.
There you go. Okay. So so you know what it is, John. You know, when you live in those apartments in the early 80s, in the big apartment buildings, you turn on that light, you see, they run away, all right? And when you step on a roach, don't tell me there's not goo coming out, man.
Oh, you know, roaches have a specific smell, too, don't they?
That's right. That's right. They have a smell, they have a crunch, and they have a goo. Ooh. Was there a lot of goo? Yes. But that was a big ass roach. So I don't doubt the level of goo.
Mixed those are cheesy nacho levels of goo.
Exactly. Exactly. There's no way in hell that the level of goo that came out of that roachy stomp was inappropriate. Now, the Starship Troopers ones, those are like Madagascar cockroaches, man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So pretty sure that, not an inappropriate level of goo there either.
You guys want to hear something cool?
Yeah.
So based on my research, the guy who made the cockroach gag, his name is Screaming Mad George.
Yeah. Yes, that's what
he said. And he's worked on a bunch of movies, and you watch the behind the scenes. He's just this hilarious guy. But I found out that they use jelly donut consistency to make that slime that she gets stuck into. And John, this is gonna be the greatest moment of your life. One of the guys who set all this up, who did all the like goo and everything, he goes, slime is very important in horror movies. And I went, John is very happy about this. That's like one of these guys.
It's the most important
thing. But I love that line. He's like, yeah, slime is very important in horror.
I want to buy that guy a case of beer and drink it all with him.
Jamaican air horn, man. Definitely. You got to have that goo. And now that brings me to another thing, okay? Because you mentioned they check in, but they don't check out, right? The Roach Motel, the greatest gag. To me, there have been so many iconic kills in these movies because there's like 9 of them. But the cockroach death with her, I think that's the best one. I think that's the best one out of all of them. Because that, I watch Nightmare on Elm Street movies for joke. These are hilarious. Like even though the first two are really dark, by the time you get to 4, 5, 6, these are hilarious. Freddy's joking. But man, she is, first of all, breaks her arms backwards, right? And then the dangle.
That's why you gotta trust your spotter. You don't just pick anybody.
Thank you. And then, side note, also, those weights, perfect chrome silver. Like, how much money does this girl have? But anyway. So with the dangling arm, she runs, trips, falls, and then her face gets stuck. And as she comes up, her skin peels off, revealing just the perfect cockroach face. And it doesn't look like a fake cockroach face, even though this is a Freddy movie on, like, a $2 million budget. And then the noise is... It curls my blood. Because like I said, I hate cockroaches, dude. I have that. That's my thing from growing up in New York City. Just those things are everywhere. And that's what they look like. And then they check in, but they don't check. And there's another cockroach struggling on the side.
Stuck in there.
Right. I was just like, oh, jeez, this makes my skin crawl.
And you still see her regular legs with her pants like floundering behind the body.
Okay, so rank the kill.
Ooh.
Rank the kill. To me, that's number one.
In the whole franchise?
Are we ranking the kills in part 4?
We can start with the ranking of part 4 and then just series wide.
Taren gets me the worst because how mean it is.
Oh, it's
when he just kills a former addict with
the needles.
But it's so mean.
Her track marks were like little puckering.
It's not the most elongated. I mean, you think she'll die with the weights. But then she dies as a cockroach, and it's brilliant.
Exactly.
But I guess for me, what I think about on a daily basis is just the for me, I just get hit really hard by that death. But in this movie, I mean, Debbie's death. I mean, what could even match it, right? We have the suck face. We have Kincaid getting stabbed. Joey in the waterbed. It's by far, I think, the best kill.
Or Freddy's death himself.
Oh, yeah, when he gets ripped to shreds with all the... You know that big body?
By all those little gangly arms.
You know that big body with the people in it fell over, and there was someone on the rafters holding it, and it took her down? They said little Kimiko?
I saw the footage of that woman at the top of the rafter controlling it falling down. And then she's fine, and they take, like, a group trophy shot in front of the thing.
It's insane.
Shout out to Linnea Quigley, who gets credited as literally... soul in Freddy's chest.
Does she really?
She gets the boob shot. Yeah, that's right. Soul in Freddy's chest. But
For me, it's got to be that one. Just because you think it's going to end at the weights. And this is, I think it's a Renny Harlin classic. Because, like, Long Kiss Goodnight, there's a chase scene. But then she gets on ice skates and chases something down. In Cliffhanger, you think it's going to end on a mountain. But then the two end up fighting on a helicopter that's precarious on the side of a cliff. Like, I think, and then Deep Blue Sea, Jim Whitlock gets his arm bit off, dragged around, used as a battering ram. I think Rennie loves long deaths. Like Die Hard 2, he takes a helicopter to the plane, he has fistfights on the plane, and then he blows up the plane.
You're totally right, man. But Debbie's death is first, then Sheila, because I used to have asthma as a kid, and that was the worst.
Because she was cool, too. So I liked her.
So I noticed an additional irony to Sheila's death, even though she had asthma. Debbie comments about, you know, like, she should pay more attention to boys, basically. And she says, like, she doesn't have time for that, essentially. So I think that we were also witnessing what would have been her first kiss being fatal. And when you've never kissed anyone, the thought is invigorating, but it's terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, Jamaican air horns again.
T-shirt cannon.
Seriously. That is a brilliant point.
Wow, I never even got that.
Damn.
Wow.
Hashtag never kissed.
Well, and then the robot hand, because she likes to do gadgets.
To make stuff,
so it's a three kill.
Yeah.
She likes to make things. And then the kiss, and then the asthma.
I was excited when Rennie Harlan acknowledged that he didn't know what he was thinking about some sci-fi movie at the time when he wanted to throw that in. But that was storyboarded. Yeah. That was actually like he had that storyboarded, even though this movie was being written as it was being made. Like that was one of his ideas. And all the while for 30 years, I'm thinking, where the shit did that come from? Did they just have like a stock prop that they just shoved in there? And the answer is no.
No, not at all. Rennie said, put this in the film. Yeah.
But then the thing that they did totally on the fly and last minute was create this dreamscape dojo.
Yes.
Which in no way looked last minute. You know what looked last minute to me? Like, was there a beach movie being filmed next door when they had that beach scene? Because that felt to me like, I don't know what to do. Well, they just finished over there and there's a beach set. We'll make something happen. You, can you make a shark fin thing?
Revenge of the Nerds to Nerds in Paradise. Right. Film next door. 100%. Yeah, that looked cheesy as hell.
Wow.
100%. So
even with that bomb dropped on us, I still got to go with Debbie, right? Yeah. I can't go away from Debbie. I can't.
No, Debbie's the worst. Debbie's the worst. Because Kincaid just gets stabbed in the
stomach. I love when he pushes the car on Freddy, though. Come on.
Yes. Take Vicky. Yeah.
It would have been nice if there was a gory effect to Freddy getting crushed by that car.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of slime, shall we?
Something. Yeah, like an explosion, like in Final Destination 2, I think it is, when the kid leaving the dentist office, he scares the birds. The birds fly up, and then that huge pane of glass falls right on him. He, like, liquefies.
Spreads him, yes. Yes. Oh. That was awesome. Also, I got a question for you guys. How'd they get the dog to pee fire? Because that was awesome.
They gave him some Red Hot.
They made him eat whole match heads, and then they had him drink kerosene.
Also, shout out that the crazy dog is named Jason.
I love it. And I also think it's funny on the behind the scenes when they were talking about it, when they're like, yeah, fire, just raise Freddy. And then they went to Rennie Harlan. He's like, I don't know.
He's like, it makes zero sense. Wait, no. The question was, how are you going to bring Freddy back? And then Rennie confidently said, a dog is going to piss fire.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, a dog is going to piss fire.
And then everyone's just like wide-eyed, like, oh okay. Yeah.
Right. Sign me up.
And what a great scene, because it led into that reverse time-lapse wax-melting reconstitution scene that we see in Hellraiser 1987, that we see in Dead Time Stories, I think, earlier this year or in late 1987. But these scenes are so neat, these reverse time-lapses, because at the time, can you imagine seeing that in a theater in 1988? Like, you have no idea how that's even done. Mm-hmm.
No, it was mind blowing, especially considering that part three, to get to the bones, it was literally a projected screen on top of a composite shot of stop motion skeleton Freddy fighting.
Right.
With the psychologist and her and Nancy's father. And it just looked so cheap. Even then, it looked cheap. And then you come here, there's basically CGI. Compared to that.
I loved Kincaid's too, that they built this big miniature, probably like 15 by 20 of the cars, and put over 1,000 cars on it, and then they just pulled back, and then they did a painting on glass for the car planet. This is
so cool.
I love this movie because it's just in camera. I dig that, and I also dig that about Rennie Harlan. I think he carried a lot of that in there through there. Yeah.
He gave so much personality because it wasn't just things like that. I mean, I don't know if we put it in so many words, but like, so in part three, the characters seemed really rich, right? For a horror movie. But when I really think of them, I feel like you just told me about them and we gave them more credit because they were at-risk teens.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to belittle it. I'm just saying, like, you normally lend more of yourself to those characters. Yeah. And we got shown instead of told a little bit, like, how they reacted to back each other up. But we didn't see any evolution, really, of them as a group. This group, starting in the parking lot scene when we met them all, that felt like...
They've known each other for years.
1985 movie, One of the Guys. Think of the better, well, not that any of them are bad, but the better of the John Cusack high school movies. The parking lot dynamic has been not a trope, mind you, but a good device to introduce characters and character dynamics since the 80s, since Grease. It takes us all the way to 10 Things I Hate About You in current day. Mm-hmm. And those scenes done well, normally they're just, here's a grab bag of tropes I'm going to show you with some gags.
Right.
But in this case, this was where we really learned about these characters' relationships. Sheila and Debbie, right? Debbie and Alice looking over at Dan. This is where we learned this, and it was done well. It was done like this was a drama.
And quickly.
Yeah.
It wasn't long.
Yeah, it moves
and
fast.
And quickly, right. And all their dynamics, it was not just what most Freddy movies or horror movies are, where it's like, oh my God, this happened. Oh my God, it did. You're telling me that so and so died. I'm going to react now. I guess we have to work together. That's what most Freddy movies are before and after this. But in this case, they develop, they try and work together a little more than, if you will, in your part three. I think three did the characters great. It's just that this did the characters, I don't know, I want to say loosely, perfectly for a Freddy movie.
No, you're right, man. And to add to your point, 3 comes out in 87, right? That time, you know, you've got the spiky punk hair from the drug addict girl. And you've got, well, Kristen, she doesn't really want to do what her mom says. And she wishes that her mom would just pay more attention to her. And all of these kids, you mentioned the fact that they're at risk, but there's also that underlying, you know, us against the adults. Why won't they listen to us? All we're doing is telling them that there's crazy things happening in our dreams. If you would just listen to me, please talk to me. I want to be close with my parents. And the parents, for what it's worth, you see Kristen's mom. She's trying to get laid.
Yeah.
Do you see anybody?
Where's the scotch? Where's the bourbon?
Exactly. You know? So these kids, they're at risk and they're basically abandoned. So this is, I think that's another reason why we don't get a lot of character development with them, because the whole thing is, you know, the big thing in the 80s was your kids are doing things behind your back. And they're the things they're doing behind their back, they're doing drugs and they're doing sex behind your back, and they're just bad. So whatever.
Although that's the one trope this leaned into super duper hard, but all the Freddy movies do it, and all slashers do it, and that's the literally anvil anchored absentee alcoholic parent. Because we literally even brought, of all the things carried over in this 3, 4, 5 story arc, we actually literally had a parent. We had Kristen's mom from 3 showing up again. She's still up to no good, drugging her daughter.
Right. That's right.
You
that's
just
right.
killed and me. Then, I do love that line, right?
Right. Like,
that's kind of a nice playback.
Yes, there's that. Absolutely. And then to the credit of the writers, they actually include an arc for Alice's dad. He is absentee. He's a drunk ass. And then by part 5, you're not going to come in here and disrespect my daughter. I've been going to AA, damn it.
Right.
So even he,
I don't want to lose you.
Yeah.
But that scene though, where he's like so much vegetation, I was like, get him, Freddy, get him, get him, get him, Freddy.
Yeah.
He was good at not being liked, but I like the two kids knowing that he was drunk and already cracking open a beer. Like, oh, beer's open.
All right, exactly. I feel like we were on a train and we had a good train of thought on that train, and then I was Hulk fighting Abomination and I threw Abomination into that train and totally derailed it with this chat. Weren't we talking about ranking kills?
Yes, we were. But you just made a Hulk abomination.
We
metaphor,
let it go.
Simile.
That's what we do.
We need to
That's
get married.
That's what we do here.
Because I love, I love you now. Because I love you now. And yeah, I have been buying Incredible Hulk longer than I've been alive. The actual comics. And yes, rank the kills, baby. Go for it. So series wise. Series. We've ranked part four, and to me, for what it's worth, series wide, I think this
What's
one's
the
best.
Top five each.
Okay, go for it, Chuck.
Oh Jesus, I'm not prepared for this. I can say my next favorite kill very confidently of all the movies, very confidently. Nope. And Mark, as much as we talked about it in our Nightmare on Elm Street 3 episode, I'm not going to take Taryn's death.
Ooh.
With that, I'll call that the most shocking, the most mean. It sticks in my head the most. But when I think of the nature of the kill and the psychology behind it, as mean, cruel, terrifying as that is, it's got to be what was his name? It wasn't Joey, the one who was marionette.
Yeah. I forget his name. Yeah.
Yes.
So thank you. In his entire fantasy, see, in everyone's fantasy, they're either being chased, which is more typical of parts one and two, until you die. But you have the illusion that you have a chance to escape or fight this. Starting in part three, in general, you had some kind of a power. They started to give them powers, right? It's like Fast Five in the Fast and Furious movies. All of a sudden, everyone's a ninja. Everyone knows MMA. Everyone can use all the guns. Everyone can fly a helicopter. Gets more and more. Now they're like Thor and Captain America and Fate of the Furious, right? Because they can do everything. But I love those movies, by the way. I'm not making fun of them. But whereas he, not Joey, wasn't Joey. Joey's the mute.
Philip is the sleepwalker. Philip.
Philip the sleepwalker. Okay. Philip, though, he was the one character in all four movies this far into the franchise, and maybe all the way through the rest of the franchise, who was never afforded even the illusion of chase, escape, or fighting back. He was a victim by creation of his own joy, turned into his horror in a most disgusting, thematically very painful and forced. Freddy is moving you to your own death. You don't even know it at first, but you have nothing to fight. And when you see it coming, he was probably being tugged down that hallway of that bell tower. He might have known something bad was going to happen. That might have been the most torment rich.
Yeah, it was sick.
Of them. And when you're just watching it, I'm bad with needles. And for some reason, that gets me. And I can watch someone's head getting sawed off on an old ISIS real video.
Yeah.
And just be like, man, that's horrible. Holy crap. Whereas needle scenes and the scene with his tendons being tugged. Oh my God.
My hand hurts now. Yeah. My wrist is hurting.
So that's clearly going to be. Conceptually, right? And you have to think about this for it to be so horrible, but I think that this is one of the richest deaths. This is the one penned by Lucifer.
Yeah.
Well played, sir. Well played. Yeah. I don't like anything that deals with cutting your wrists. And he just takes that to level 7 by slicing your entire forearm and bicep open. Yep. And no, I'm going to just play with your muscles. No.
Sorry to add more. I love loved weird Asian horror movies before any of my friends did. I'm going to go with the Tetsuo the Iron Man death of Dan in part 5, where he turns into his own motorcycle.
Yes.
I really, really appreciated the power glove death. That was good to the time for me. The jumping on them and making them smaller kind of death scene. Again, but that in that case, it's not because it's a great death scene. It's because it just hit home to, you know, 12-year-old John.
Topical. It was topical. Right?
I will come out and say I distinctly do not remember the deaths of Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Julie gets me pretty good because it's a repeat of
Tina. I remember the tone in that, right? And so and then the caterpillar death in Freddy versus Jason.
Yes.
And I'm not going to touch the remake because they weren't trying with that anyway. And in the earlier movies, I don't think it was about that. In one and two, it really wasn't about that. So those Those are mine. I don't think I can order them. I got to tell you, I'm very conflicted. This was one of my this was my first love in horror franchises. I can tell you, here are some highlights, but I can't order them. So, Mark, why don't you give us your
Taren
soliloquy of death scenes in the Noe's franchise?
Taren, because it's so mean. We've discussed that. It's just brutal. It's mean. Gives her confidence to begin with, and I'm bad.
Yeah, he does.
And then she just loses it all. It's cruel. Yeah. And then I'm going to take Debbie. I think Tina's death in the first one, just because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, what is happening to me? I teach film, and I always teach this death to my students, because there's great behind-the-scenes videos of how they built the room and the spinning room and what had to go into making this death. And I just think they were on such a budget, but to make, put it on a gimbal, to rotate this room, bolt everything down, get that scene, I think it's a work of art. I mean, I know it's death, and I don't really like it when you look forward to characters being killed, but as far as filmmaking goes, it's excellent filmmaking. And just watching helplessly and seeing that death hits me hard. And then I would have to say Nancy from the third one, because of just, it's her dad. It's like, gotcha. It's mean. It's very mean.
It was sad. And that was sad,
For me, I know I have the cockroach death in here, but I kind of lean against the funny deaths, I guess. I don't know if I'm like the power glove. It's creative. It's cool. It's fun. But I guess I just, I don't know. I like the deaths to be affecting. And so that's what, and I'm not, there's nothing wrong with the other kills, but I guess these ones all felt especially mean to me and layered. And I mean, it's just, I was watching Dead Meat to catch up on this, and I love that show on YouTube, but he was kind of making fun of Debbie, but I'm like, I like her. She's pretty cool. There's nothing wrong.
She was a great character.
Debbie was awesome. She's got Peg Bundy hair. She likes exercise. She takes no crap from anyone.
Such a long, you're right. She sticks up for her friend in the beginning. Like, hey, needle bit.
She defends the weak. She defends the weak.
And so, I think these just sort of hit me, I guess. I like the deaths that I always lean towards are just super mean, because I feel like they affect me. So that's probably those are my tops right there.
So Norbert, you cast this gauntlet.
Yeah. Okay. Ranking the deaths. All right. Top five.
Are they in order?
All right. Number one. Yes. We'll do it in order.
Is number one being the best?
Yeah. One being the best.
All right.
One being the best. Number one, Debbie. Debbie takes the worst.
It's the most theatrically rich. Yeah.
It is. And I really don't think it's funny at all, because he's making these jokes, but he's torturing
her elbows.
I don't think that's so painful.
That was about the most special effects rich death at multiple points.
Screaming Mad George crushed it.
Screaming Mad George in the building. So number one, we got Debbie. Number one is Debbie. Number two, I'm going with Sheila, because like I said, I used to have asthma, and that freaked me out, because he sucks all the air out of her in a dream, but then when it cuts back to reality, it's just a girl having an asthma attack.
Right.
And the worst, one of my nightmares is drowning. Just not being able to breathe.
Is that part five, or is that Freddy's dad?
This is still four. Okay. This is still four.
Oh, I thought you were going with the diver into the empty pool or something.
But that girl lives in part five.
God,
it's all right. Yeah. I was preparing for this podcast. I watched all of them. So that girl lives. She lives. She ends up freeing Amanda's spirit. Thank you. So that's number two. Number three, like you said, John, because you did that brilliantly with the wrists. For Christ's sake, man. Yeah. Poor Philip. Philip takes a loss.
I just felt a little stuff in my throat when you just make me thinking about those wrists and and nerves.
Dude, it's the wrists.
Jeez, so
okay, that's number three. Four from part one, man. That exploding bed.
Yeah.
That image is iconic. The geyser of blood shooting out of the bed. And then finally, number five, I am going to say, I'm not sure.
Top four. Nails.
But I only mention those because those are the ones that just stick in your brain when you think of this franchise. Honorable mention I'll give to Comic Book Guy just because it was cool to see Freddy slice the piece of paper. The color came out. The color drains out onto the floor and turns into blood. So that looked cool, even though I hated that kid. I wanted him to die because he was just, I loved her, but I never told Greta how I feel. Ah, Greta's actually a good one.
Oh, you might have to eating death.
Yeah, the eating disorder. Oh, yeah.
No, I forgot all about that one. That was a great one.
Yeah.
And then those huge, like, distended chipmunk cheeks and that vomitous, like disgusting mass of food erupting from her mouth. And no, that was good. That was actually really good.
Replace Comic Book Guy with Greta. That's number five.
In fact, I feel like I need to import her to my list. I forgot all about her. No.
And there it is, man.
And I guess I don't know, this movie, I think, do you guys think it still holds up all these years later? Do you think Ready Harlan made something for that lasts?
You know, I said earlier, I'm going to say again, I find that I like these movies, all of them collectively,
yeah,
more every time I see them. And the fact that this one is in sequels that are truly sequeling each other, it feels all the richer for me. It's not just the evolution of Freddy in these cookie cutter movies. It's the evolution of Freddy and the evolution of the way the characters deal with Freddy, the evolution of Freddy's mythos, even though this movie is like the one that doesn't contribute to that at all. But I think that had to do with the writing issues.
Yeah. Oh, wow. This contributes nothing. Well, maybe the
zero.
Nothing.
No.
Zero. The part three, it really initiated that for us, and it did it very
well. The soul thing, right. Even the way they look in his body. That's right, John. Right. Yeah.
The Amanda Kruger, the collecting of souls, like all that stuff. And this one, we're just kind of basking in the soul concept, like, I don't know, your bearded dragon after it ate too many crickets on its hot rock. Like, just self-satisfied, like Emperor Tarkin in Dune.
And then he gets wiped out by a Ghostbuster laser. Well, I love that.
Yeah.
But then in five, that it starts to come back, the building of that mythology of Freddy. And I thought that was what really was the big standout of three. The big standout of four is that the characters really were next level. Three were next level at the time, but four was next level even with respect to three.
Yeah.
But three, the way they wove that in, it gave such an unexpected gravity that had nothing to do with the meanness of Freddy. And that was something that this movie so wanted to have. And again, because I guess the writer's strike, if that was it, or just the fact that they rushed this movie, if that was it, they were making a movie as they were writing it, and so they didn't get into the pithiness. but somehow the characters worked so well. That somehow came out like magic, right? So that's an interesting aspect. That would be like, it's not that it is a shortcoming of this movie, but it's a shortcoming of this movie with respect to the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody's a good actor too, which is what carries the script.
Definitely,
except for Tuesday Night.
Yeah,
I've never been a big fan of Tuesday Night in this movie, and I kind of always look forward to her death, just because Arquette did such a good job, like you said, in the third one.
She was just natural and feral. Apparently, a terrible actress from the problems that she had on the set, or just a terribly ill-trained actress. The scenes looked great, but she took like 89 takes, and it was driving the director nuts.
Right.
And she couldn't remember her lines.
Right.
So she was poor as an actress, but she delivered well when she finally got the take well, if that makes sense, right? She was like feral. She was like, what would Chris Tucker say in Fifth Element? Like, fire!
you know what made me happy about the behind-the-scenes videos of this is when the Freddy stunt double's cussing on set. 40 takes! This is BS! This is crap! And he's just screaming at everybody because he doesn't want to go back in that tank. that they did for the waterbed. That made me happy. Right. So I like that she wanted a lot of takes, but Freddy's stunt double's like, I'm out of here. I'm done with this. But in that tank, that must be a pain in the butt.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
There's so much more to, like, we haven't even touched on the nunchucks.
Dude, there's nothing more 80s than nunchucks, yep. Man.
The bad, you know? Stunt hair.
There's nothing. All right. Listen, 80s hair, okay? Everybody's got some kind of spiky hair, you know? Debbie's got Peg Bundy hair, okay? Rick has the spiky hair. Debbie's got the Peg Bundy hair. But Dan, I think literally they just brought a Ken doll to life. That guy just looked exactly, you know, if you close your eyes and imagine Midwestern All-American quarterback, it's yeah. Dan. So that was flawless.
And he's the one who picked up on the deja vu.
Yes, that's right.
The time loop that they were in.
He's very intuitive.
That's it.
John, how good are you at the nunchucks?
Actually, I used to be pretty good. I used to do a lot of demos at like tournaments and stuff. But
you notice I asked you how good are you, right? I didn't ask you do you know how.
I probably hit myself in the head.
please tell me that when you were training with the nunchucks, it was after you saw this movie and you put on the song, I'll give you anything, wish I would. I'll give you money, drugs, and drugs.
If we're being honest, I was aiming more for the dream sequence in Sidekicks.
I do want to bring something up.
The dream sequence in Sidekicks had the best filmed nunchuck demonstration in the history of film, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, I love that. Would y'all think about the, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the production design by CJ and Mick Strawn, they did 4, 5, and 6, Suburban Commando. But there's a lot of red and green in this movie. I don't know if you notice this, but you watch it and there's like red truck, green this. In the diner, there's red and green. Sometimes people are all wearing outfits where they're a little bit of red, a little bit of green for Freddy's sweater. So the color palette in this movie, I mean, this is what movies should do. But the color palette in this, even in the restaurant, what they're wearing, the jacket has red and green on it, the varsity jacket. Mm. It's a really neat color palette they established in this movie. And that's not something you make up on the fly. I don't know if y'all noticed that, all the green and red in this movie.
I did not.
Well, it's really, that's why I said earlier, this movie, it looks really bright for a horror movie. Especially considered, I was thinking maybe it could have been the transfer to DVD, you know, because the difference in the technology maybe between the cameras they used in part 3 and part 4. But 1, 2, and 3 are dark movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like visually dark. They're not bright. And then part 4, we're just in suburbia. Everything's great. Oh my God, I've got a math test. What's going to happen? Freddy's coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's.
I dig it. I think it's just another reason why, I mean, for a horror sequel, this right now, I think, has a 53% of Rotten Tomatoes. And that's almost unheard of for a fourth film in a franchise. It really is. When you,
that seems low to me, though.
I deal with a lot of horror data. And you never see fourth films this high in it. So even though it's low rated, it's still one of the highest rated fourth entries of all horror genres that have been made. I think it should be fresh because just the kills, the actors, it had a writer's strike. They couldn't really work too much on the script. I think the kills are inventive. And once again, watch it again. Just watch the first 15 minutes and you will pick up on the production design. You'll see the red and green everywhere. It's really neat. And I just like thought out stuff like that. They wanted to create a color palette and they did. And it's Freddy's sweater.
100%.
So it's always 100%. In your brain. You're maybe thinking, oh, red and green. Maybe it's subliminally or subconsciously there. But yeah, this is a fresh movie. And I've said that about a bunch of Harlan films. For some reason, he gets unfairly judged for some of his pictures. But this one, I think, should be up there with, it should have the tomato.
Okay. I have two questions.
Go for
one. How did you feel about Nurse Freddy?
Loved it.
Oh, Nurse Freddy was not only creepy as hell, but when they go back to the actual nurse, kind of looks like that nurse.
If I was watching an 80s high school movie and someone bumped their head like John Cusack bumps his head and it was that exact footage of a nurse, I just believe it.
Yeah, 100%.
I just believe it. Like, we know that's Robert Englund.
Yeah.
But I got to stop and wonder, like in 1988, did people know? I mean, I realize he was on The Tonight Show and all this stuff, but like just the happenstance person. Oh, let's go to a scary movie. I haven't even seen part 3. When they see this, do they even realize that that's Robert Englund?
No, probably not. Just the.
It was, like, it was, be- It was before the internet, so he was not seen that much outside of the Freddy costume, unless you watched V and you were really into sci-fi, because he was also in V. He was one of the aliens.
Right, and I think, like, just the Tonight Show, just, like, you know, things like that are how people would know what he looks like. And my second – so there were so many things in this movie, like the beach scene that stood out to me, like it, and that robot arm that it turns out that Rennie Harlan specifically wanted, which blows my mind. I still think the beach scene was a movie, a low-budget movie that finished shooting next door. Okay, the spinning funhouse tunnel.
Random.
I maintain that had to be another thing.
Budget.
That just happened to be available to them, that they happened to shove in this.
Yeah.
To like this is a free gag. Let's just, because it doesn't make any, like, does that happen in movie making?
Yeah. So there, with this one, it had a little bit of a budget, but it was so rushed. So it could. It's a great question. I don't know if that was just laying around, because they talk about that in behind the scenes documentary. From what it seems like, they didn't have much money, so they just kind of maybe found something really quick and then just half-assed it. Because there's a few...
Because they had, if I recall correctly, they had $5 million, which Rennie thought was huge because he had $1 million for his previous horror movie. But Robert Shea is like, I'm only giving you $5 million. Like, it's not a lot of money. And he's like, oh, great. I'm sorry, no, Mark. You were saying about the budget.
You know where the budget went in this movie. I mean, there's certain shots that take... That cockroach shot was months in the making. I mean, and you got to pay somebody for that. Like, that's where all the budget goes. But for this one, I remember them saying, just laughing about how cheap it was. So I think it was just them putting something really cheap together or finding something, cutting. There's only a few holes cut in it. It's the weirdest shot. Rennie wanted more.
Yeah.
But I was watching a behind the scenes, another doc on YouTube, and there's a thing where I think they called him Teddy Harlan. They messed up his name one time. I just want to say it. But I do love – no, that's a great question, John, and they touched on it. I just think it was a super cheap thing. So maybe they found it. Maybe they just borrowed it from another set. Someone else was using it. But they made a joke about it, and I didn't write it down, which I'm kind of bummed about.
See, that's the most baffling thing of all the things that I question in this movie. Again, the beach scene – whatever, there's a beat. Well, they made a scene of it, okay? And then they made a special effects gag, which probably wasn't very expensive to do. The most expensive part of that gag was probably the fact that you had the exploding sandcastle, right? Mm-hmm. But making the Freddy Claw Shark's Fin, that might have arguably cost them $200.
It could be.
Of course, you have to have a rig, I guess, to run it on. Maybe that's more expensive than I'm realizing. They could have co-opted something else. But, like, they made something of that, right? And that robot hand, even if it was just the ripped-off arm of the robot that was making a phone call at the Inventors Convention in Gremlins.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what I thought. In the time machine.
It makes a lot of sense. That time machine that works. Yeah.
If that happened to be next door and they used something, but still, they made something creepy, whatever. That spinning tunnel scene, every time I feel like I've ever seen this movie, I'm shaking my head like, spinning tunnel?
Why?
What are you doing here? You don't serve anything. If we skipped those 9 seconds, the movie is no less rich, which makes it's the one thing in this whole movie that strikes me as just a greedy, cheap, crass grab at something.
I agree. It was in the script, and they wanted to execute, but they just couldn't execute it correctly.
That was in the script?
It had to have been.
That thing was in the script?
It had to have been, because you still have to get the light gels. You can't just set that up in a day. So you have to find studio space, which means you're renting a studio. You have to find the materials. You have to deliver it. You're not going to do a company move from your stages to find that, because then you got to move your entire unit, which is more money. So you want to find something in the stages that you can make as cheap as possible to save money. So they had to have been planning that.
I feel like I'm going to one day see a 1987 or an early 1988 released movie.
With the exact same tunnel.
With that tunnel.
Yeah.
Very few holes.
Killer Clowns was 88.
Imagine if it was that good looking, though. Like, imagine if they pulled that off. If it was something better.
With the light, yeah, the light and the mist and the smoke coming in.
Better cut.
It was a great shot of Freddy at the end of that tunnel, by the way.
It looked creepy as hell, yeah.
They made the best of it. I just question, why is it here?
I guarantee everybody on set hated it. And Rennie showed up and went, what is this? You know, he's like, what? And so remember on the behind the scenes thing, they shot splinter units too. So Rennie would be on the main unit, and as opposed to everyone doing something the next day, they would have a smaller unit, which is something a lot of movies do, where a little splinter is off to the side doing the special effect shot. So you don't have to go back another day with the full crew. So maybe Rennie just thought, you know, gave it up to his production designers and okay, you got this.
Or perhaps he's in Finland and as a child, before you go to church, now we go to the spin tunnel, the Kleinsefast. Oh, the Kleinsefast, yes, it is so much fun. Let us spin the tunnel. Oh, look, there's a dark man who wants to play the game. Oh, quick, why don't you give him some of your fish? Oh, I do not have a can of fish. In the spin tunnel, oh, he comes with the claws. And then he puts it in the movie as an adult.
Come, children, I have chocolates on this side of the tunnel.
Would you like some chocolate? Or perhaps a mackerel? A pickled mackerel?
A mackerel?
Ew. I'm staying on my side of the tunnel if you're offering pickled mackerel.
Actually, my mom loves pickled herring, actually. She has a bunch of Swedish in her, so all those Swedes and Norwegians, they housed pickled herring.
The chocolate!
But yeah, no, I that's a great question, and I really need to go back and watch Never Sleep Again, because they did talk about that. And they all laughed about it, though. So it just seems like a big joke on their set. It should be.
I got a question for you guys. Did you ever watch MTV with headphones on?
No, but I would sit there calling and requesting music videos.
Because Joey totally had the 60-foot headphone cable connected to the stereo that ran through the cable, and he just watched MTV literally any time he was not in school. So I was wondering if that was a thing.
Didn't Johnny Depp watch TV with headphones in
Pokemon? Oh, yeah.
It was definitely homage, man. Yeah, because they both died the same way, too, in a crazy bed.
Whoa.
Death, yeah. Man. Because MTV through the headphones, I mean, yeah. I guess you would have to do stuff like that because you couldn't go to Napster and just rob songs, you know? If you want to be cheap, you either tape songs off the radio or on VHS, right?
I was lucky. I grew up, like, on the second floor of my house when I grew up with my mother. Like the second floor was kind of like a hallway, and it was like four rooms, and I was on one end and she was on the other end. And that way, like, so unless you're cranking the hell out of the music, you can like watch TV and it's not going to wake someone up or keep someone up, 20 feet down the hall, two closed doors. Whereas I think like most houses, that second floor where the bedrooms were, those classic two-story houses, it's almost like you walk upstairs and it just explodes into doors. Like there's just five doors within 5 feet of you or 8 feet of you. And each one is like, you know, there's like a closet, a bathroom, a bedroom, a bedroom, and a bedroom. And you can just hear everything that's going on.
How obsessed do you have to be with MTV to plug headphones into your stereo? It's just real.
I used to call and request Today by the Smashing Pumpkins and then Regulators by Warren G. I used to call up all my buddy and I would sit there, can you guys play this song? And then where we got through, which one should we do? And then it was either Today or that. And we were like, did we burn our pick? Yeah. So, hey.
I always like that Mad Max video of the California. Yeah. Knows how to party. Yeah. What song is that? California Love? Was that the name of that song?
California Love. That's right. Video.
Welcome everybody to the Wild West.
Yeah. I listen to that a lot. That's a good video.
Dre and Tupac and all.
That's when a lot of money was spent on those videos.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. $1 million videos were
that
not.
That was like Fury Road before Fury Road.
That's
those
nice.
Scenes.
That's
nice. Were they in Namibia?
they weren't like the ones I worked on, that's for sure. So, hey, final thoughts about this movie, guys. Just sum up your thoughts. You can either give me your favorite moments or your final thoughts. Let's hear it. So, Norbert, final thoughts or favorite moments. What do you got for this movie?
The greatest lines in the whole series to me, I am eternal, which is so much better than I am forever that he says in part 5 or 6. And then the number one line, like I said before, I've been guarding my gate for a long time, bitch. Slap. Just like, oh! Freddy's a badass. This is my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street of the original series before Freddy versus Jason. 100%.
Sayonara, Rick.
And the trilogy here. That's right. The trilogy. You find your balance, Rick. You're killing me now. But yeah, out of the original six, 3, 4, and 5, they tell a perfect arc. I mean, for Christ's sake, even the alcoholic father gets a resolution. It's just a good trilogy of movies. And this one, it's brightly lit. Might not have a big budget, but it looks great. And that cockroach murder, for God's sake, I mean, I can't eat right now thinking about that cockroach murder. That's it, man.
John?
Bitch.
I think Freddy is even more iconic and impactful than people even realize that it is when they think they know all these characters. People only know that Michael Myers was Laurie Strode's sister because they redid that timeline three damn times over the course of decades. And so there are two remakes essentially telling you that, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only reason people in their 20s know that. Otherwise, they just say Michael Myers is a mass killer who may or may not be coming for his sister, and they have no idea the origin, right? Jason Voorhees. I think that people think that he's a masked, unkillable killer. If you're in your 20s today, you know, you didn't grow up with it. You fancy horror a bit. And he's just a mass killer who goes around killing people, and he's unkillable, and he keeps coming back. People don't understand that he drowned to death and that his mother was the first killer, and then he was a killer, and then eventually he became undead, and it took movies to do that. You know, they don't know the story. I think that even a 25-year-old who's only seen 50 horror movies ever knows that Freddy came back to kill the children of the parents who burned him.
Yeah.
It's so real. Yeah.
I'm serious. I think that people who haven't even seen the movies know more about Freddy than they do these other famous killers. And so for this reason, I plead with any listener who just errantly watches one Nightmare on Elm Street movie a year. Most of the years it's part one around Halloween, probably. Most of the years it's part one. One year you catch part three sometime in October. Another year it's a date night and AMC is doing a marathon and you happen to watch part five and you're watching them randomly. I plead with you, three, four, and five.
Three, four, and five, baby.
Watch them back to back and you'll realize that every single one of them is better than you ever thought any one of them was. Mm-hmm. And that there's so much more here than you realize, because when you visit these as an occasional tourist, which I did for the first 20 years of me watching Freddy movies, by the way, right? But these things are, there's more to them. I'm not going to call them art, but there's more art to them than you realize.
Yeah.
They're deeper and richer and meaner and more thoughtful than you realize. So please give them a chance. Pick next Halloween. Watch part three 1 week, part four 1 week, and part five another week. You can watch any other Freddy movies you want, but watch those three and watch them in order. And I think that you'll pleasantly surprise yourself and realize why you know more about Freddy, even if you don't remember part one or two very well, than you do any of these other people. There's a reason. It's because it's more Americana than the others. It's because your parents and older brothers talk more about how much it hit them than the others. Halloween's a great film, right? Especially for its time. But the depth of the kill, the depth of the mythology, like, didn't exist there. It was scary because it wasn't there. Mm-hmm. This is scary because they did a good job building it. Mm-hmm. Give this a chance. And then after that, rewatch the Saw series in order, but that's a taller order. Because I'll say the same thing about that.
So awesome. Apply all of that to Rennie Harlan films, and that's my final thought right there. His movies are better than people realize. I think he deserves more credit. So
he's right. Because he shows up maybe as an entertainer first.
You know, and during the making of this movie, he's like, this is what people want. This is what people want. This is what people want. And it made a ton of money and it's still popular. So yeah, he was right. I mean, it's what people wanted. So it was good. All right. Thank you for joining. Thank you for joining me, guys.
That's right. No problem. Thank you for helping me come back to a time when Americans were just openly rooting for serial killers.
All right. So this was fun. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for John Levingood, and for Norbert Morvan, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.